Hello again, friends, and welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. How's it going? Man, spring is here, and then I get up this morning and there's snow on the ground. It always happens out here, man. I started wearing shorts to work, so it's my fault. Snow came, it's my fault. I wore shorts, and I'm not going back to pants. As soon as I'm rocking shorts, the pants don't go back on. I'm pantsless. I'm just a shorts guy, and I despise winter for not being able to wear shorts and sandals. But I went for a ride. Actually, I went for a wicked ride last night. Just did some recon around the area. Just did some gravel and some double track. Saw some elk, family of elk. Saw lots of deer parts scattered all over the place. And was able to kind of get into some areas that I didn't think were going to be open. You know, it wasn't too muddy. Obviously, we have to be careful this time of year. But I got to get out and ride. And I've been riding bikes a long time. I know how to ride in multi-conditions. And I'm always conscious of what I'm leaving behind. And leave it better than you found it. That's how I always try to approach things. So I hope you folks are getting out and riding your bikes. And you know what I can't wait for? I can't wait to get my new rolling tail. It just hurts. It hurts so bad. I just can't wait to get it. You know, I've had handmade bikes in the past. You know, I have two Cro-Mags that were handmade in Canada, in Squamish, actually, I believe. And I really love those bikes, but this is the first bike that I've ever had that's kind of built around me and my measurements. So pretty pumped about it. And the collaboration between, like, hey, what are you doing with the bike? You know, I'm building it around the Karate Monkey fork, which I think is, 120 mil suspension correction, I think. So I'm going to build it initially as a rigid bike, and I do plan to race it on the BC Epic this summer. So I'm pretty pumped to do that. So I'm going to actually do it with gears. But this bike will have sliding dropouts, so I can go back to my love of single speeding and for sure do some more events on that bike in that configuration. But it's been super fun to work with Dale on that bike, and like, I'm super pumped to get it. I had some feedback online about a dude was asking me. He said, you know what, you should do a podcast and kind of talk about how you train for events and how you prepare. And honestly, when he wrote it, and I wrote him back and I said, dude, my imposter syndrome bells are going off like crazy. Like, I just, you know, I talk to a lot of these elite athletes, and you know, it's hard for me to share stories with them because they're just, you know, like Josh Cotto and you know, Steve Halligan coming up, and you know, Sofiane and Jay and these and everybody else who, you know, they're just so established in the ultra endurance scene, and my experience is just so little to them. But you know what, I learned a lot. And he wrote back and he said, dude, you have a couple of accomplishments, like, be proud and share what you did. So I thought maybe during the next couple podcasts coming up, I would just like share a little thing, like just to throw something in. And I think what I wanted to say this week is just that you can use any bike. It doesn't matter what bike you have, whether it has suspension or it's rigid, like full suspension, rigid, no suspend, like rigid. It doesn't matter what bike it is. You can retrofit bikepacking shit onto that bike. So don't think you have to go out and buy the latest and greatest gear. My only caveat to that would be, it's got to be reliable. If you're going to go into the middle of nowhere with your little tiny house, then you have to at least make sure that your machine is in great condition. So I guess that just goes into another thing that, you know, I've heard of people, they'll start races and then they'll like break a chain, or they'll bend or break something or rip their derailleur out, which, you know, you can't, that's, accidents happen, right? But I always replace my drivetrain. I always replace it before I go out. It's like, you know, new ring, new cassette, new chain, done. Just do it, get her done. And then bearings, you know, check the bearings, make sure everything's kind of smooth and not crunchy. And you know, actually, you know, my few races I've done, Lost Elephant last year, you know, I actually switched brakes on the bike I was going to ride. I took some SRAM XO brakes off my single speed and I put on some SRAM guide brakes, and Avid XO anyway. And one of my guide brakes failed. So I ended up riding like 500K in the Rocky Mountains with just a front brake. So, you know, shit happens. As prepared as you can be, you know, I had those, they were feeling good and I bled them and they were just running so well. And I think, yeah, just some like hidden issue. I think there are a lot of plastic parts inside the master cylinder of those things. So I think it just had a failure in there. But anyway, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you can ride anything. Whatever mountain bike you have right now, just do it. Get a couple dry bags, some wall straps, and you just strap shit to your bike. Or don't get any of that and just carry like a backpack. Yeah, that's it. That's all I wanted to share this week. It's like everybody can do this. It's so easy to get started, especially if you're a backpacker. You have all the shit already. So all you have to do is just get it on your bike and then ride somewhere and camp. So, you know, that's the first thing I wanted to share, just about the rig. But really, I could go on and on, you know, about it forever. I love it. I love it. And, you know, there weren't a lot of like bikepacking podcasts a handful of years ago to find information. So again, it's valuable to share. And you know, there's a lot of forums out there and Facebook groups, and people are always asking questions. People are always asking the same question over and over and over again. But it's like people get into the sport and they don't know. They're just reaching out for help. And what's great about the bikepacking community is that there's so many people ready to share their opinion. And I mean that in a great way. Like sometimes it can be a bad thing because you'll get a million different opinions about something. But everyone wants to help and everyone wants to share, right? So it's an awesome community, and that's why I love you guys. That's why I love it. So yeah, keep reaching out for help. People are listening to this. If you have questions, just reach out. You reach out to me directly. You can reach out onto the forum. Any questions you want to ask, reach out. And you know what? MyBack40podcast@gmail.com. And don't only just send me questions, send me voice intros. Whip out the device, record something on it, and then just email it to MyBack40podcast@gmail.com. Love hearing from you. So yeah, awesome. Something else I wanted to thank a bunch of people for is some of the great comments I had on that Aaron Blevins podcast. Out of my wheelhouse, right? Definitely out of my wheelhouse. And you know, this podcast, when I started it, it was about training, nutrition, bikepacking, endurance cycling, and the mental benefits of moving through nature. And what I think the baseline of that is we're athletes. Doesn't matter if you're some pointy end of the stick guy. He used that term a lot. I got to find another one. Doesn't matter if you're like some elite guy or if you're Lantern Rouge. We're all athletes. We're all at different levels, but we are all athletes. We all train to get ready for these things in one way or another. The people who are winning these events are gifted athletes who work hard to train to win. And, yeah. And I just think it's awesome. So, I don't even know what I was talking about. What was I talking about? Yeah. So about the Aaron Blevins thing, I kind of had a feeling when I put it up because it has a picture of Aaron. She's fucking shredded and she's jumping rope. And I just figured that people wouldn't resonate with that. And I actually did get some feedback, that people were reporting it as irrelevant. So I apologize. I apologize that ended up in your feed. But what I do want to say, and John Germsey Jr. said this in one of the posts, he was commenting on that, and he said, you know, I wasn't really going to listen to that podcast because it didn't seem to resonate with me. But as soon as he got in there, he found a lot of relevant information. And my response to that was, we're all athletes, and it doesn't matter what discipline we're practicing in, we could all share information about the way we train, the way we eat, the way we recover. And so from time to time, you're going to see the odd podcast that may not look like it's cycling related, but you know, I challenge you to dip in and listen to that because I mean, a lot of the ideas that I've kind of taken on in the last like, handful of years of listening to podcasts and listening to cycling podcasts it's made me grow. It's helped me grow as an athlete, I think. I think I'm an athlete, you know, I get after it as much as I can, and any information I can find that helps, that is relevant, I'm going to listen to. So yeah, I want to thank the people who commented positively on the Aaron Blevins. And you know what, for me, I was super nervous about it because I don't know, it was just so outside my wheelhouse, like I said at the beginning, but, I think it was super relevant and I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't listen to it, I encourage you to go back. Give it a try and send me your feedback about it. I'd love to hear it. So, yeah, thanks everybody. So this week I wanted to repost a conversation between Ross Burridge of the Hidden Athlete podcast and Michael Delagrange, human rights lawyer and founder of the Imani Project based in the Netherlands. Michael works with the International Criminal Court, helping victims in East Africa exercise their rights and seek reparations for the crimes and harm that they have endured. Michael is also a passionate cyclist and has found cycling to be a positive way to engage with the people in these countries, helping him balance the tragic events that have occurred with the beauty of cycling. As a human rights lawyer, he is also passionate about race and gender equality in cycling. Ross Burridge works for the Cotton On Foundation, focusing on finance and sustainability in South Uganda. They help to build schools and support around education and infrastructure. Ross saw the cycling talent in the region, whose athletes have no way of showcasing their talent to the world. This was the catalyst for the Masaka Cycling Club. In this episode, they talk to the progress being made through their collaboration with the Amani Project and sister clubs. They talk about how they plan to navigate the barriers that still remain. They discuss how a relationship with Wahoo and the e-racing platform has enabled them to bring this talent to potential recruiters. All the topics accumulate up to an exciting future for our friends in East Africa, and we would love the global cycling community to get involved. If you're interested in helping the Masaka Cycling Club and making some dreams come true for these athletes, please visit their website and discover ways you can help. No donation is too small. And without further delay, I bring you Ross Burridge and Michael Delagrange.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ross Burridge, and welcome to episode 86 of the Hidden Athlete Podcast. And welcome to today's guest, Michael Delagrange, all the way from Geneva, Switzerland. How are you, Michael?
I'm good, Ross. How are you?
I'm good. And what are you doing in Geneva, mate? Because normally when I talk to you, you're in The Hague in the Netherlands. Like, how'd you end up in Geneva?
Yeah, it's I pulled a sly one, you know, I just snuck out. Well, you know, like Holland is a great place, and I spent 10 beautiful years there. But the opportunity came to make a switch and be a bit closer to the mountains. I thought, why not live in a place that I normally vacation to for once in my life? So, we'll see. We're just trying it on. My wife has got a job here at the UN, and I'm working remotely at the moment. So, it's the best of both worlds. Wow. While the pandemic rages, it's a possibility. So I thought I'd take it.
Sounds amazing, mate. So for the listeners, a bit of background on Michael. Michael's a human rights lawyer. He's very passionate about race and gender equality in cycling, and a massive cycling fan. So the reason why some of the listeners out there will understand our involvement with the Masaka Cycling Club Foundation. But, you know, maybe a little bit of background for you, Michael, in terms of how the listeners got involved in this project and what we're going to be talking about today. But so my background, I work for a company called Cotton On Foundation, and my role with them is finance and sustainability over in southern Uganda. We build a number of schools over there and support them with a lot of things around education, infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of this particular project, I'm a cycling fan as well, pretty crappy cyclist, mind you, but spending a lot of time in that region, I got to know a lot of guys over there that were passionate about cycling, and certainly came to realize that the talent was running pretty deep over there, but had no way or means to mobilize that talent or showcase that talent to the rest of the world. So a good 12 months ago now, Michael, we launched a couple of episodes on this platform and shared the story with all the listeners, trying to understand or see if there was a bit of an appetite to help these guys over there bring that talent to the fore, essentially, help them by providing a bit of funding, put a few programs around them to try and showcase that talent and get things started over there. And the appetite from the listeners on this podcast was amazing. So the reaction was incredible. So what we're going to do today, hopefully, is just give everyone an update as to where the project's at. Firstly, I need to apologize to the listeners about not my lack of episodes around the athletes. So all my time has really just been absorbed in this project. So for those that aren't familiar with the project, this will probably sort of help you understand as to why there has been a lack of episodes. But I really just wanted to bring everyone up to date share where everything is, so you understand how far we've come and what's still to come. And Michael has played an incredibly important part in this whole story. So I thought, why not get him on and he can share most of his involvement. So that's the purpose of the episode today, Michael. But hopefully that gave you a little bit of background as to how it all started and where we're at today. But this one's all about you, my friend. And why don't we kick off by you giving the listeners a little bit of background as to who you are personally, and then we'll get into the Imani Project stuff.
Yeah, sure. And Ross, thanks again for having me on. I'm a big fan of yours, as I told you, and I told various other people. Amazing work what you managed to do with Masaka, and yeah, I'm just honored to be in the fight and in this project together with you and various others. So yeah, that's just a kind of first word, but about me personally. Look, I got into this cause, I think, in a similar fashion as you. You know, I have a day job as well that had me traveling to East Africa quite often over the last 10 years. And while I was focused on that job 100%, I also, you know, with cycling being my passion and my hobby, I was always just kind of in tune with what was happening in the scene, you know, and who was doing what, and, you know, and just listening for years, to be honest, without getting involved. But then at some stage, I just thought, I mean, the stars kind of aligned, and it wasn't just about me, frankly. We have a lot of people in this project who are doing great things and volunteering their time, But frankly, at some stage, we could see that maybe our platform in the Netherlands was something that could help the individual initiatives from each of these East African countries that I was spending time in kind of break through the barrier. They seem to be, from my standpoint and my vantage point, to be facing similar obstacles, though they weren't necessarily coordinating. And they weren't learning from how they overcame certain aspects, you know, like from each other's mistakes or from each other's challenges. And I thought, yeah, maybe with our strategic position in the Netherlands, with that being a kind of big cycling mecca, and us having, I have a bikes and coffee shop that I'm a part owner in as well, and we had a relationship with the Dutch Cycling Federation. This is all a lot of detail, but I'm trying to get the big
thing. Go for it, mate. This is why we want.
Anyway, that's what happened, right? So we thought, yes, let's leverage that position in the Netherlands and see if we can help the various key actors in Uganda, Kenya, Rwanda. Achieve their goals, essentially. So we didn't design any goals. We don't have an agenda. We're basically just fanboys and girls, cheerleaders. And we have a selfish interest in this entire project, and that is, we love cycling, and we want cycling to be more international. I mean, we have, as I've said before, you know, we have a world championship, but it's vied for by 7 or 8 different countries. I mean, that's not a world championship. You know, I think those of us who love cycling want to see more countries involved. And so, yeah, that's our approach.
Mate, you jumped over your sort of skill set a little bit. I think it's important for the listeners to understand what your background is, so they don't sort of feel or think that you're some random dude off the streets of the Netherlands trying to make change. So I'm going to force you to try and just give them a little bit of background to your skills and what you do for a living, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I work at the International Criminal Court, and that is why I was in East Africa for as long as I was, and in that job specifically, my role is to, I help victims of the crimes that come before the court to exercise their rights, and potentially at some stage seek reparations for the crimes and harm that they suffered. So that's what I do as a day job. But cycling is also a chance and an opportunity to engage in some of these countries in a far, far more positive light, right? And not just be dealing with the tragic side of our collective behavior and experience and existence, but it's also the kind of beautiful side as well. So
now there's probably work on three levels. I was thinking about this before I dialed in. There's three levels to this project, and your Amani project is one of those. So I sort of see it along the lines of we've got the on the ground committees that look after the day-to-day stuff for the clubs. So the listeners would have heard Miro Michael, our chairman at Masaka Cycling Club, talk on some other podcasts. And then you've got sort of the middleman, like the Hidden Athlete Project or the Masaka Cycling Club Foundation, and then which is trying to mobilize and bring that talent or support that talent in those regions. And then you've got the Amani Project that's trying to showcase that talent, essentially, like bring it to the fore and stick it under the noses of the influencers in cycling to let them know that there's massive talent in East Africa. So talking with you today, I would love to sort of for you to share a little bit about that third tier, which is the Amani Project. It's something that you founded and you've got an amazing team around you trying to showcase that talent, essentially. Can you just give us a bit of an idea of the goals and the purpose of the Amani Project?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, just from the beginning, this is a project that, based on my experience, I find that when you try to get involved in challenges that are not necessarily challenges arising out of your own country or cultural milieu or whatever it may be, the best thing to do, in my experience, is to be humble and be quiet and listen. Because if you come already with an agenda, you might find, because of the power dynamic associated with where you may be coming from in the global north and trying to do projects in the global south, that you might find that you have a receptive audience because of that power dynamic. But that doesn't mean that you are going to achieve what you set out to achieve. And I've just seen that too often. And I work quite closely with certain international development. I've just seen a lot of good things and a lot of bad things with respect to international development. And I think that's a big lesson learned for me. So when we thought to get involved, we just started listening. And what we heard from, from our partners in Kenya and Rwanda and, eventually Uganda, was that the thing that they were missing more than anything was racing opportunities. And so we thought that this was something, being based in the Netherlands, that we might be well positioned to assist with. We also just kind of canvassed the scene to see who was already doing, certain things that were helping to provide racing opportunities, to make sure that we weren't doubling up. There's so few people involved in this when you really think about the scale of the ambition and the project. But the last thing you want to do is be competing, because we're all after the same thing, right? So we were just kind of exploring and to see where there was a gap and where there was a niche. And I think ultimately we settled on the fact that one thing that was not happening, as I said in the very beginning, was that there wasn't coordination, I think, across especially in the East African cycling scene. A lot of the same challenges, a lot of the same, gaps in terms of, resources or in terms of opportunities. And this just needed to be, I think, coordinated. So that's something that we try to do. And then the other thing again is to create racing opportunities. And I'll explain how, together with you and together with Jock and Kimberly from Africa Rising, and together with Kieran and Sule and all of these guys, Simon Blake, how we've creatively come up with some ideas to try and create racing opportunities. Should I get into this?
Yeah, if you don't mind, that'd be great. How do you plan to do that? Or
I mean, so look, the way you can think of the Imani project, you can think of it as three prongs. That's, I think, the easiest way to conceptualize the whole thing. The first prong is we ask our sister clubs like Masaka, like Africa Rising, like the Kenya Riders, to field the best athletes that they have at their disposal who could benefit from some experience riding in Europe and competing in Europe. And at the same time, we built a club filled with mostly Dutchies at the elite level, who are just super motivated to, for the same reasons, right? Like super motivated to make their sport more international, to get a chance to ride with people they'd never had a chance to ride with, to have that kind of cross-cultural dialogue, and to show, some new people their country, which they're quite proud of. So we put this, you guys select a couple of riders, the Kenyan riders select a couple of riders, our partners in Rwanda do as well, and then they come to Holland. But instead of it being a super high pressurized environment where if they don't succeed in the first race, they got to go home, or they have to perform, otherwise they're not going to get the contract. None of that, right? Because in our listening campaign, what we heard was some of the reasons for the high attrition rate for some of the African riders who've come before, who've tried to go to the World Tour, is that it's just damn daunting, to be placed into this cultural environment, a linguistic environment that's completely foreign, and then have these outlandish, expectations of performance on day one. And when you really think about it, does that Belgian kid or the Dutch kid or the Italian kid have those same pressures? Of course they don't. If they get their wheels blown off in a race, it's just another day out in the course. They go home to mom, they get that pasta made for them, and then they're trying to get the next day. So I think that's already smacks me a bit as unfair, right? And I think it's not that it has an evil person behind it. There's no sort of agency or any anyone pulling the strings to make it unfair. I just think it's by definition a very traditional sport, and this is how things have always been done, and it's always been Euro based, and therefore there isn't any infrastructure to necessarily allow for others to engage. So that was the kind of, so if you're thinking again now, going back to our three prongs, that's the first prong. So whenever you hear anyone talk about Team Imani, Team Imani is really only time you'll hear about Team Imani is when you have riders from Uganda, Kenya, and Rwanda racing with our European counterparts. Otherwise, we're just Imani project focused on creating a spotlight for our sister teams, so they maintain their identities. But when we're riding together, then we're kind of a team, right? So that's the idea behind the first prong. But as with the best laid plans, they all went to shit, of course, like everyone's plans with the rise of the pandemic. And so we were, like everyone, I think, spring last year, scratching our heads, thinking, "What the hell are we going to do now?" And then we had an aha moment about this online platform. We started taking a serious look at it and realized quite quickly that because everybody was being driven to this platform, it suddenly became a tool that ticked a lot of boxes for us. For one, I mean, if you look at from a financial sustainability side, I mean, what it costs us to outfit a single clubhouse like the clubhouse in Masaka, is what it costs for the two athletes to fly to Europe. Not even talking about what it costs to house them for a month and a half of racing blocks and bringing them to the race and all of the other things that are associated with that. I'm just talking about the flight. And then what do you get in return? Well, in return now you have the tools and the technology to create racing opportunities for an entire clubhouse, and not just one, for a month, indefinitely. Mm. There's the racing opportunities, but then there's the testing opportunities. So where it used to be quite anecdotal, in the sense of, well, let's see who rides up the hill fastest. now we suddenly have access to potentially some of the best and brightest and the most innovative training techniques and testing techniques for coaches, you know, and people on your side, for example, Ross, to be able to just discern who is worth, you know, the investment, who was worth these big opportunities, and using sort of science rather than, you know, anecdote or just, you know, who might have been on a good day, right? So, so I think those two things, and then the third thing being with the racing, obviously the Zwift Racing League, there's now international racing, which is just crazy when you think about it, you know, like, so now we cut like the tens of thousands of euros potentially off of what it took for a single athlete to get this international racing opportunity. And now you just like expose them to it. And again, not when they're in a cultural environment or a linguistic environment where they don't feel comfortable, they're at home, you know, in their own clubhouse, racing against, you know, somebody else in their clubhouse. And so it could be the great leveler. I mean, I get excited when I talk about it, but you know, and I don't want to exaggerate because maybe, you know, at the end of the pandemic, everyone goes back to the road and no one rides online anymore. But even if that were the case, which I don't think it will be, because I really do think it's here to stay. And I think a lot of this online racing in particular is going to be important, particularly for talent scouts, etc. But even if that were the case, I think just from the standpoint of using it as a recruitment tool and as a training tool and a testing tool, we already achieved quite a lot by having our clubhouses outfitted. And this is, I think, an opportunity to kind of plug the key actors who made this happen. You know, I mean, first to say that Africa Rising, Jacques and Kimberly Boyer, critical. They were super critical in the very beginning to just using the resources that they've developed over the years, whether it be logistics or just interpersonal, and just getting. So once we got these tools in The Hague, they just made it. They made them appear, you know, in Africa, which is more difficult than you can imagine, actually. So not you, Ross, but the listeners. So yeah, that they're a key partner, and then of course our corporate sponsor Wahoo, just buying into this at a very early stage, seeing the potential, and then really just kind of on a you know, without much to show for it other than us, you know, talking and a lot of air, they backed our play. And now we have three clubhouses online with yours coming online very soon. So it's all very exciting.
It is very exciting. And I'll get into in a second, you know, what you're starting to see already in terms of the talent and the power, et cetera, at this very early stage. But I just want to take you back. You raised a couple of little interesting points at the start of that explanation about being silent and the power dynamics, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's really important for people to understand how this actually works across the three tiers. And you know, I touch on the white saviorism idea of thinking, et cetera, because going back to your power dynamics, so talking about the three tiers, so there's the day-to-day running of the clubs, the sister clubs on the ground. So today as we speak, you know, that happens with committees that are based on the ground. They are nationals, local nationals running the day-to-day stuff, making the decisions on the ground. So it's not something that either you or myself have a lot of influence over. We put our total trust in the way that they run their clubs on the ground. We've got good people in place to make those decisions. So and then, you know, basically what I do, and I'll lead on to you in a second, basically what I do is I ask them what they need. So just go to them and say, you know, what do we need to mobilize these kids? You know, what do we need to support them? To live out their dreams, you know, bring hope to their lives, live out their dreams and potentially grow the sport of cycling in Uganda, Rwanda or Kenya. So So the dialogue sort of comes up the chain rather than going down the chain with us potentially, you know, the risk of us potentially pushing down the chain and taking on that lead role of thinking we know everything is quite dangerous in a culture that we don't really know very well at the end of the day. So it's important that it comes up the chain. So really, you know, myself and everyone who's involved in Masaka, we basically respond to the needs that are shared to us through the committee. And your role with Team Amman is very similar. You sort of touched on it a little bit, where you come to me with a question and go, well, where's the gaps, Ross? Like, what are the gaps that we need to help Masaka close? And you touched on the e-racing sort of equipment that we need to fit out our clubhouse. Just general storytelling is a big one, like sharing this whole story with the cycling community, which Project Amani, or the Amani Project, has been very influential in doing. So I just wanted to touch just briefly on this white saviorism thing, because, you know, there might be people out there that just sit there and listen to this story or this podcast and go, oh, there's a couple of white dudes thinking they know everything about what's going on the ground. And for you and I personally, we know that that's a big issue for us, and we've carefully navigated around that issue with how we operate in this space. So just wouldn't mind getting your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the thing that we just have to never lose sight of is that, yeah, in the sense that if you are involved in a project like this, there will always be an optics issue. But I think what you need to be able to do is that when you are conducting your activities, if you do so in a manner that stays true to the underlying objectives, this isn't a vanity project. This isn't, you know, something that I'm trying to make money off of. Quite the contrary. I think what we are trying to do, it's not what we don't have an agenda that we are setting. I think that's the key critique, and I do think it's a valid critique. I do think that in general, a lot of international development and a lot of organizations that are involved, particularly in the developing world, have outdated mindsets, and they do still harp back to outdated power dynamics. And I think it's right for everyone to ask critical questions about anyone who's involved in this kind of thing, not only in Africa, but in any of the developing world. I welcome those questions, frankly. And I guess the only thing we can do is just be transparent, right, Ross? Like, what we're trying to do is we're trying to build heroes, national heroes. And those heroes are saying, this is what we need, you know, to break through. And we're going, well, where we're sitting, we might be able to help you do that. But it's still up to them. You know, like, this isn't, I mean, if they don't break through, you know, at the end of the day, I'm still doing what I do for a day job. You're still doing what you do for a day job. We're just doing what we can as selfish cycling fans, you know, to make our sport international, more inclusive. And it just so happens that you and I, we work in these areas, right? So we are by definition, you know, constantly reminded that there's a bit of unfairness here, you know. And honestly, if I really think back into, like, even why I became a lawyer in the first place, and I don't want this to be about me, but unfairness in general just always pisses me off, and you almost feel like, at least, you know, a lot of us, especially everyone who's volunteering a lot of time and effort in the Amani project, I'm sure it's the same for you. If you can do something about it, why the hell wouldn't you? You know, like, and I do think that if you do so in a respectful manner, your stakeholders are treated with respect. They're the ones driving these initiatives. They're the ones identifying the things that they need, and then we're just kind of using our privilege, if you like, to help provide it. They still got to walk through the door. So I don't know. I mean, I think, as I say, it's a complicated one. It's not one that I welcome the dialogue. I welcome the discussion. But ultimately, I think of all the projects, and I would say this, but of all the projects that would smack of white saviorism, I think we're trying to do the opposite there.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, like I sort of explain this whole project to people as being a humanitarian project first and foremost, if I can use that word. You know, we're both cycling fans and everyone involved are cycling fans. I'm sort of the attitude that, you know, if we can create some hope and bring some equality into the sport, then, you know, hopefully we'll end up with some elite cyclists on that international stage. But I think it goes back to sort of providing that opportunity and trying to mobilize that hope and talent on the ground is something that we can certainly help with. Now, just on some of the inequalities, I want to touch on, because we have a lot of female listeners and, you know, like we don't talk about it enough, I don't think. You know, we talk about race and gender equality, but for women in this region particularly, sadly, the reality is that they face far more barriers than the boys or the men in that environment. I just wanted to just get your thoughts, you know, for the interests of the female listeners, you know, like some of the challenges that you've seen or potentially feel like frustrating or so forth in terms of what a female cyclist faces in this world.
To be honest with you, I find this topic, the topic of gender, far more treacherous than the topic of race.
Yeah.
mainly because I also have a house filled with women, my wife and my two daughters. So, if I take one wrong step, I'll be sleeping outside. So, look, I think it's really problematic. But again, some of these issues are, I think, beyond the scope, at least for on the Amoni project, and in general, this is also the experience I have with my day job. You know, sometimes you encounter things in different cultural dynamics that are foreign to you, right? Like you know, it may be even they may even be something that you find confronting with respect to your own value set. But you have to pick your battles and you have to check yourself as well. Because I think, you don't want to come in and say, well, the way that we do things back in the United States or the way that you do things in Australia or is the way that things should be done here in Kenya. That being said, it's a fine line, right? Because at the same time, we are trying to get involved with people on the ground who are trying to change things. So I guess what I'm doing, at least to kind of walk that fine line, is just be responsive to the initiatives that are coming forward. Are there not enough women cyclists so far who have been able to take advantage of some of the opportunities we're providing? Yes, that's true. Is there more we could do to encourage female cyclists to ride? Yeah, there is. But I would say, and we still haven't talked about our third prong of the Amoni project, but this is the one that gives me the most hope in terms of gender inclusivity. Because so just to get at it, so as I told you, the three prongs, the team Amoni, where the riders come from East Africa and ride with the guys in Europe for a couple of racing blocks. The second prong being our Ride Online campaign, where we have an online team that rides and races in all the Zwift racing leagues, but also an event that we do every Thursday night that brings everyone together. And then the third prong is the Migration Gravel Race. Now, the Migration Gravel Race, the idea behind it actually came in a meeting in Uganda the shores of Lake Victoria when I was meeting with my friend Simon Blake, who's then one of the DSs at the Kenyan Riders, and we just started brainstorming over, at the time, a kind of crisis point. It was an inflection point in their history, their very storied and celebrated history, where they had some serious financial issues. And we were brainstorming because it's, again, a cross-cutting issue. You know, how do you make this sustainable? You know, you have a couple of good years of good publicity and people are donating, et cetera, but it cannot, that's not sustainable. There has to be sort of an indigenous cycling culture that sustains these projects. And to do that, you have to have heroes. That's the way. That's the way that I'm now convinced we are going to succeed, is that we got to create heroes. And to create heroes, you need a platform. And, you know, originally all of us, all these different projects were focused on, okay, well, we get these guys to Europe and then they're going to win something and then they'll be heroes. But it's so hard, you know, it's so hard to do that when they have so few opportunities. It's so pressure packed. It's just setting them up to fail. So what we wanted to do was bring the international competition to East Africa, bring it to their home turf, bring it to where they don't feel all the pressure, but the international competitors do. And it just so happens that Kenya in particular, I think, is one of the most beautiful countries in the world, but topographically very diverse and just dotted with gravel roads. I mean, way more gravel roads than tarmac roads. And they traverse some of the most storied and spectacular national parks in the world. You know, things that like inspired Lion King and you know, the Great Migration that you see on the National Geographic and all of these things, they're all happening in Kenya. And so, yeah, we had this kind of harebrained idea to just set up a gravel race in one of these national parks across the Masai Mara. And it just kind of took a life of its own. And then again, just like the online campaign, the more people we got involved and the more like, you know, crazy ideas that were coming forward, the more traction, and it started to snowball. And more people got excited about it. And then, then I think it's just turned into something that really ticks a lot of boxes for us as well. So again, now we create international racing opportunities, but from the revenue of this race, we hope to be able to finance the development team in Kenya for, you know, let's say for a year. But every year that we put on the race, this is, you know, resources that the Kenyan riders can depend on, so they don't spend all their time chasing down, you know, money, and instead can focus their time on developing the next generation of talent. Now, going to gender inclusivity, because I haven't forgotten it. One of the key things that I think is holding cycling back, particularly in Kenya and Uganda, is that riding on the road is treacherous. It's treacherous. You know, there are so few tarmac roads, and the tarmac roads that are there are populated with lorries and various other things, you know, and in Kenya, it's sad. It's a sadly almost a weekly occurrence that someone is being killed on the road. And so there's a great incentive for us actually to build a culture of gravel in Kenya, but I think also in East Africa in general, and get these athletes. I mean, you still have to push the same amount of watts. There's still these epic climbs to be had on gravel roads, you know, like you can still do proper training, but then you don't have to worry about getting sideswiped by a car. And now I think with this, we have a platform or a space where, you know, we can also entice women to come out and ride and compete and start to experience cycling. And now we can see already from the first class of the migration that we have quite a few, I'm happy to say, representatives from the other gender, from the other side of the aisle. So it's not enough, but it's a nice starting place. And I hope that that these ladies, you know, I'm confident that these ladies are gonna do well, and then hopefully next year inspire, you know, even more women to start taking this up.
Mate, I'm glad you brought the migration gravel race up. It was on my list of things to talk to you about, because I'm looking at that as being a massive opportunity, like for Masaka Cycling Club for one, but East African cycling, like you talk about. You know, we've had the benefit of being in East Africa. We understand the conditions, you know, what sort of world, you know, the locals live in. So to be able to have a high quality race like the Migration Gravel Race in Kenya, is super, super exciting. So I think, and we'll talk about, you know, some of the riders that are going to come from outside of East Africa, but I suspect that whoever's coming into Kenya from outside, from Europe or wherever, to race these East Africans, they're potentially going to be in with one hell of a shock in terms of the talent and how fast some of these guys really are on their local turf. So maybe you can share with us, you know, who's coming? Who's coming, Michael?
Well, I just let me reiterate what you just said, because that's the thing that brings me a hell of a lot of joy. It's just a huge smile to my face, because I totally agree. Like, I think there's going to be some sucker punches thrown in this race. Because there are some, you know, very, very talented international riders who we are very thankful are coming and making this the kind of big competitive event we wanted it to be, to showcase the talent that we've got. And I can tell you that the guys that we have on the East African side, fucking serious. They're very serious. You know, like, we got a couple of winners of the Tour of Rwanda. We have the first African to finish Paris-Roubaix. We got, you know, national champions. You name it. And they're all, I think, very, very focused on this opportunity to give these international competitors a run for their money. But again, you know, that's also part of it, right? Because I think that's also going to break down a lot of stereotypical nonsense that's in the minds of a lot of Europeans, there isn't any talent here, that these guys don't know how to handle a bike, you know, or that they fall apart with the first time of adversity. We'll see.
you and I are sitting here looking at each other, yeah, sort of smiling, sort of knowing what's coming, because, you know, you've actually been there. You've been over the course and you've been in East Africa for a long, long time. And I've been there for quite some time myself. So I've got we've both got a pretty good handle of the talent that exists there and how freaking quick they are on their own turf. So,
but going back to the point about making heroes, now, this is where I see an opportunity of potentially taking a shortcut. Because I think so far everybody has been so focused on the Tour de France. Like, you know, it's not going to be – no one's going to succeed until, you know, an East African is standing on the top step of the podium in the Tour de France. I mean, not to say that that's not a laudable goal. It is, of course. But there are shortcuts to creating heroes, right? Like, if we get a guy who, for example, stands on the top podium of Leadville – or Dirty Kenza, I know they renamed it, or what, you know, one of these big gravel races, man, people are going to take notice. It's going to be, one, financially very interesting for the individual who does that, but also, you know, like, they'll be celebrated athletes. So maybe gravel is going to be an opportunity for us to, for these guys who are familiar, been riding these roads their whole damn lives, you know, they put that skill set to the test and maybe get a chance to start to make waves earlier than we anticipated, right? I want to talk a little bit more about a silver lining from this project that you and I need to discuss.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so that is that, again, with our partners, Wahoo and also Kenya Airways, who are key sponsors of the race and the project. The top two finishers from East Africa are going to get an automatic berth into the Steamboat Gravel Race, which is a very prestigious gravel race in the United States, and the Belgian Waffle Race in the United States. Wow. So, an opportunity for two riders to get big international exposure and real racing opportunities as well over there. It also turns out that through Wahoo, they're trying to make the Steamboat Gravel Race the first live telecast gravel race ever. Wow. So there's going to be a lot of attention on that race. A lot of big names. All the biggest names in gravel are going to be there. It's an opportunity for these guys to, you know, some proper motivation to do well in the migration. And then to kind of top that off, and this is the thing that you and I need to discuss, is Wahoo is also going to make an investment with respect to their human talent and capacity by lending their Wahoo Sports Science guys to kind of train our trainers, to put these guys, both our coaches, on the platform so that they can use the Sufferfest technology to do proper testing and proper, you know, race schedule up until the migration. And then use that as a kind of matrix to also judge to see, like, you know, if you think that the performance at the migration was a one-off, no. These guys are putting out world tour numbers, you know? So it adds a layer of credibility to the guys who ultimately are selected. And it's just really cool also because it's great that, you know, our guys, our coaches, our athletes are going to be basically privy to the same kind of training techniques and testing techniques that are being used at the world tour level. So that's really, really good development.
Oh, mate, it's I'm pretty stoked and excited about what's coming. And I sort of had an inkling of some of that stuff that you just mentioned, but sort of not to the depth. That's the first time I've heard it. But I think the Migration Gravel Race, I should actually say to the listeners, if you're not following Migration Gravel Race, jump on Instagram and search Migration Gravel Race and follow this race because it's going to be pretty, pretty freaking crazy. But just getting back to what you just mentioned, you know, I don't know how these worlds align or these suns align, but we've found ourselves a coach, an amazing UK coach that's based in Kampala called Sam Mutton, and he's been instrumental in really preparing our guys for elite sort of races. And you know, I think, you know, to be able to provide Sam with this Sufferfest technology on this e-racing platform is really groundbreaking for us. Like, we're so excited about it. Like, we feel, Michael, we feel like we've got two boys that can be in the fight for East Africa, Waswa Peter and Kato Paul, under the tutelage of, you just imagine this, under the tutelage of an experienced cycling coach in Sam Mutton, incorporating this Sufferfest and sports science technology in their preparation to get ready for this gravel race. I'm just so excited by understanding and seeing how these boys go as a consequence. Like, all these people that are involved is really humbling for one. And, you know, like, if I can just say on behalf of Masaka Cycling Club, you know, thanks for everything you're doing, Michael. Thanks to Wahoo. Thanks to Sufferfest. Thanks to everyone involved in the Imani Project, Jock and Kimberly. You know, you're bringing, you know, the hope that you're bringing to this region and what you're bringing to the sport in East Africa is absolutely incredible. So all of those things. And look, mate, I assure you, we are preparing within each of our lives. We're going to come to this Migration Gravel Race and we are going to stick it to the Euros. Look, I don't know whether we're capable of being the best in East Africa. Like, that's my concern.
I think
we're more likely to stick it to the Euros and the Americans and the Aussies, whoever turn up. I'm just concerned about, shit, how do we overcome the Kenyans and the Rwandans? Because you and I know that the terrain is absolutely horrible, if I can say that frankly. The Euros and everyone from the Western world, if I could say, have never ridden on terrain like this before. But these guys live in this area, and that's what they ride every day. And, you know, half of them are 60 kilos, mate. They weigh nothing. And they are fast beyond belief. So our two boys.
Ross, don't psych these guys out. I still need them to turn up.
But then you talk about, you know, the two winners, or the first and second. I think it's first and second. You can correct me. Potentially go to the USA. Yep. For a period of time to race the best gravel races in the world. Like, this is huge. You talk about heroes. Like, I'm just hoping like hell it's, you know, two East Africans, one and two, and they get that chance that you just spoke about.
No. I should clarify. It's not just the top two. It's the top two East Africans.
Right.
So we're not going to send like the best international. If they win the migration, we're not sending them to the United States.
No, good. Yeah.
Can afford to send themselves with their own sponsorship. I mean, look, we're just trying to level the playing field. I don't think that they need any help. If they manage to win this race, they'd be of a class that they can definitely afford to get to these races themselves. That's a big if. But hey, there's one more thing I'd like to kind of talk to you about, and it's along the lines of what you were just saying with respect to thanking whoever to be involved. But we're also going to launch very soon, because I had this interview not too long ago where someone was asking me, "Does Imani? So what's the next step for Team Imani? Do you want to form a world tour team and win the Tour de France?" And I thought, why the hell would we do that? There's already people doing that. There's Doug Ryder, he's got this Quebec Oasis team. There's a lot. We have three teams, by the way, or four teams in Rwanda, Kenya, Uganda, who have their own aspirations to kind of reach those levels. No, because if one person does it, if one team is doing it and they are successful, we all are supporting that, right? This is a concept that I really want to get around, particularly in our circles in East Africa, and we're calling it the Team Moja campaign. So it's Swahili for one team, essentially. So we're even dropping Team Imani. We're just calling it the Imani Project, because I don't want anyone to think that this is about branding or that we want our names on everything to kind of over the name of Masaka or over the name of any other team. Because a win for one is a win for all. And it sounds like rhetoric and a bit of bullshit, but I tell you, I think it really needs to be something that we all internalize. There's like so many cool things happening at the moment. So while we have the migration and maybe a bit of exposure at the moment, there are a lot of cool people doing really cool things in East Africa. And I'd plug, for example, the Rwandan Epic. There's some cool gravel racing going on in Rwanda. And when those guys get the publicity that they deserve, or the race around Rwanda and all these things, I'm just clapping. I get super excited about that. When I see KTN that's on GCN, another race in Tanzania, I'm like, hell yeah. And I think we all need to be like that, because frankly, we are all so small and the challenge is so big that we really need to be pooling our resources. And so I just kind of want to get that message out there on this Team Moja business that we're all one team, one striving for the same thing. And hopefully together, all of us, we can, move the dial just a little bit.
Yeah, that's spot on. And as you were talking there, I'm thinking, we're having a few challenges in Uganda at the moment with the national body. We haven't really spoken about that to give sort of people perspective of what the role of the national bodies in each of these countries is and how they're influencing essentially what we're all collectively trying to achieve. But I feel, and like asking for your opinion and feedback as well, but there's this systemic issue in East Africa, and dare I say it, the word corruption and let's leave it at that. But the national body in Uganda, for example, should be playing the roles that we're trying to play as we speak. But they have, at the moment, they're having absolutely no influence over mobilizing cycling and creating the same opportunities that we're trying to create through this whole collaboration, if you like. I'm just curious as to your thoughts and your feelings of where they're at the moment and what potentially they should be doing or what your hopes for the national bodies are in these regions. Tricky question, I know.
It is, and to be honest with you, I don't think it's actually a question only about East African countries. I think there have been serious corruption allegations in Europe, with the UCI, in the United States, all over the place. And so in general, I think cycling governing bodies are pretty shit. So I'll just put that out there.
Yes.
and not make it an East African issue. I think from our perspective, the best thing that we can do is we build a culture. We help our guys build this culture of cycling. We create, you know, opportunities for them to become heroes in their own countries. And then with these communities that are developing through, you know, mass participation events, like, you know, we also, I didn't get a chance to mention, but we're also doing this Migration Gravel series, a series of 6 mass participation events in the country, not geared at professionals, but geared at just normal people who want to come out and experience their gravel roads, et cetera, and get involved in cycling. You build these cultures and you build these communities, and then you have a constituency that cares about how their federations are being run. At the moment, nobody cares, and therefore there's no oversight. And it's natural. It's natural. It happens in the States. It happens in anywhere where there's not a constituency that cares, corruption happens, you know? And so I'm not shocked by it. I think it's normal, and I think that the prescription to deal with it is for us to succeed. We succeed, we create these communities, we create these constituencies, and they will not tolerate it. And then there will be change.
Yeah, agree. Now, mate, we're getting to the end. Michael Delagrange's vision. I'm going to challenge you to look forward, let's just say 2 years. What do you think this whole Omani project and this whole collaboration is going to look like in 2 years' time?
So, I mean, yeah, rather than to say my vision, because, you know, honestly, it would be like Suleiman Kangani's vision, or, you know, Wasawa Paul's vision, or, you know, Joseph Alleluia's vision of where cycling will be in these countries in the next 2 years. But what I think, if we achieve our goals, I can say this. I think if we achieve our goals and we continue on as we are, in 2 years' time, you know, we have athletes from Masaka who have been cherry-picked by talent scouts, who are racing at the pro-continental level, who inspire the next generation of athletes coming from Masaka and all over Uganda to be signing up from on your camp and on your club. And the same thing happening in Kenya and Rwanda, where we just constantly place, you know, riders higher and higher up the echelons, whether it be road or whether it be in gravel or wherever it may be. You know, we have a team that's feared in the Zwift's racing league at the elite level, because, you know, the athletes, even though they're racing at, with a huge disadvantage at elevation, are still smashing it. you know, these are things, and then of course, I mean, it would be great that that the Migration Gravel Race is seen as, you know, one of these races that's on the calendar, right? That you want to win, you want to come, and you want to face the best in the world at gravel. You got to come to Kenya to do that, and then we have, you know, this event that the guys can depend on year in and year out to be a place where they can get access to international competition. And then the winners, you know, when we get these winners, they get the fanfare and, you know, become these kind of local heroes. They get these opportunities to race in Europe. And yeah, again, they inspire the next generation, because that's the key. For everything that we lose in terms of, you know, the best athletes being plucked by talent scouts, et cetera, and going, for every one of those athletes that makes it, it starts getting paid by riding their bike. You get 10 new athletes, at least, you know, who fill the ranks of the development squad going, well, shit, if this guy's making a living riding a bike, maybe I can as well. And I think that would be an achievement.
Yeah, I agree. Mate, it's, you know, what the listeners probably don't sort of realize is the people that are involved in this whole collaboration, like, we use each other for a bit of, almost like a source of therapy sometimes, to stay motivated and in the game. And, you know, just sitting here today having a chat to you is always my sort of, you know, constant source of motivation, hearing you speak and knowing that they've got someone out there that's got our back and, you know, that is in the fight. We're in the fight together. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing the whole story today. But one thing that one thing I want to finish off with is just to potentially or just challenge the listeners who are listening to this episode to get involved, because we really need the whole cycling community behind this project, not just the cycling community in Australia or the Netherlands or Switzerland. It's the global cycling community getting in behind this. You know, like if you're out there listening to this episode and you've got a little bit of humanitarian pumping through your veins and you are a part of the cycling community, we need you involved. We certainly need you involved at the Masaka Cycling Club. And there's ways you can get involved, like really low barrier entry level ways to get involved. And the way that we build a sustainable program around the Masaka Cycling Club is we ask cycling fans around the world to contribute a small monthly sum to our program via our website. So our website is www.masakacyclingclub.com. I'll put it in the show notes so you can find it. But if you're from Europe, you know, like simply a £4 contribution per month is a significant contribution to this program. And the idea is that we get numbers behind it contributing €4 or £4 or $5 or $5 Aussie dollars, whatever it is. There's heaps of currency options in there. If we can get like 500 or 1,000 sort of cycling fans from around the world contributing a small amount like that, we can leverage those funds to fast track this whole program, certainly in the Masaka Cycling Club. And, you know, I know Kenya Riders and Africa Rising got their own sort of fundraising program, but for us in particular, can you please take a risk on us? Take a risk on us, sign up for that €4 a month or $5 American a month. Take a risk on us. So when you go into our website, there's a little support button there. Sign up and give us a chance and come on the journey and be part of what you've just heard today. And, you know, if you haven't got the financial means, jump on our Instagram and follow Masaka Cycling Club or Team Imani on Instagram and just cheer us on, be part of it and learn a little bit more about the project through the Instagram posts. So, you know, one, it's a bit of a shout out. I know that a lot of our listeners are already on board with this fundraising program, but we need another, if we can get another 200 or 500 sort of followers from around the world, which I don't think is unrealistic, you know, we could really fast track this whole program. So, mate, bloody stoked.
I could just piggyback off that and just say, look, if you wanted to support Team Imani or the Imani Project, support Masaka. That's it. Because that's what we're doing it for. And it's such a great project. And I tell you, Ross, your energy shoots electricity through our entire program. We're all volunteers. There's a huge, I mean, I'm the one talking today and I tend to be the one talking, which is unfortunate, but there are a lot of people doing a lot of crucial work with the Imani side and with the MGR side, and I know that Ross, your activities and your presence and your energy really motivates us. In fact, it's surprising how many orange jerseys are in the in the Lola clubhouse even as we speak. So yeah, man. I really encourage your listeners also, just to second what Ross said, get behind this. It's a great project. I totally vouch for it. And yeah, that's why we're partnering with them. So yeah, best of luck, mate.
Nah, thanks, buddy. Any last words, mate?
No, I think
we covered it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, indeed.
All right. Well, thanks again. Enjoy your new life in Switzerland. Beautiful part of the world, obviously. And thanks for everything, mate. Your support's incredible. So glad we've crossed paths. And, you know, I hope we're looking at each other in 5 years' time, reflecting on the fact that, you know, there's a whole cycling community out there owning this project And, you know, we can sort of sit back with a little bit of less pressure on us and watch the cycling community the world over sort of owning this and taking responsibility for bringing some equality into our sport. And that would certainly be my dream. And, yeah, so we've got to keep punching until we reach that goal. So thanks for everything, buddy.
Thank you.
Catch you later.
Later, Ross.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I really wanted to repost it. I just thought it was a really important conversation. And I think it might give a lot of my listeners, especially people who haven't really checked Mosaka Cycling Club out or who are new to the podcast and haven't listened to previous podcasts about it. Just for new people who to my platform, just want to introduce you to them. So I encourage you to follow the Mosaka Cycling Club. Check out what's going on over there. Check out all the work that's going into this project and check out how fucking happy these kids are when you see them. And it's just like some of the old videos, I was going back through them the other night and there's Ross rolling down the street in Mosaka, Uganda on this fucking kick-ass road bike. And, you know, he goes to the club, their you know, kind of makeshift clubhouse, and he gives them this bike. And they're just looking at this rig and they're just like, wow, like, this is crazy. And then, you know, they have a scale hanging from the door and like they weighed the bike Ross brought. It was like 7 or 8 kilos. And then they weighed the bikes that they train on and they were like 28 kilos or something. Like that's 50 pounds. That's like going from a 15 to 17 pound bike, you know, from a 50 pound to like, that's just bananas. It's no wonder that they're so fit over there, you know, having to train on that stuff. And, but now there's this influx of equipment to these kids. These kids have so much talent, and they can't get past a certain level, one, because of the corruption, and two, I mean, the gear really holds them back as well. It's all so important. And, you know, to be able to get these kids to these races so that they can just showcase themselves to everyone. And what's cool about that is you know the idea of bringing the race to them, right? Getting on home turf, that's going to make the difference for these guys and girls to kick ass in these races. So I'm super pumped about this project. And anyway, yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. And I kind of wanted to not have any ads at the beginning because you know it's an important conversation. And but I still would appreciate it if you would head on over to Cycling 101 and check out some of their offers there. Ryan Draper is a fantastic coach. And if you use the code VIP50, you're going to save 50% off a consultation. So fantastic deal to talk to a great coach like Ryan. Also want to thank Dynamic Cyclist. Still doing their stretching program. You know, I fell off the wagon. I got to get back on the wagon. Stephanie is hard. She's tough. Hurts after I work with her on Dynamic Cyclist. And I'm scared of her actually. Yeah, man, I'm so inflexible, but Dynamic Cyclist is helping me. And if you use the code MB40 at Dynamic Cyclist, you are going to save 25%. It's awesome. I think you'll really enjoy it. Oh, there's so many sessions. There's hundreds, if not thousands of videos in there. It's crazy. And, injury prevention stuff or injury recovery stuff, yoga, strength conditioning, which I've been kind of doing now, which is, I think it's Stephanie that's doing. She's just badass. But yeah, great. I'm feeling so good and strong on the bike. Like it shows in my data how I'm just feeling a lot better. Although I have 15% recovery today. I had a shitty sleep. So yeah, MB40 at Dynamic Cyclist is going to save you 25%. And please visit Ancestral Supplements, the makers of nose to tail supplements. You know, I'm going carnivore. I've started eating meat. I had meat today, and you know, it's just muscle meat. I'm expecting my Ancestral Supplements to come. And that's what's going to make the difference because the nutrition is in the organ meats, and those organ meats get just kind of tossed or whatever. And they're not palatable. And I'm really looking forward to getting the supplements. And that's all I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be eating meat and salt and drinking water and my electrolytes. And I am going to be taking Ancestral Supplements to build my nutrition. I'm also trying to shorten my eating window a little bit. And you know what I'm finding with just a couple days of just being on meat? I'm so satiated. I haven't eaten anything today. And I keep hearing about that. And it's quite interesting. So this is my experience so far. But anyway, if you go to Ancestral Supplements, read a lot of the literature. And if you're interested and you want to get some product there, you can help me out. And they want to help you out by giving you 10% if you use MB40 at checkout at Ancestral Supplements. So I want to thank you guys. I want to thank Rebound Cycle. I want to thank Rollingdale Cycle. I just want to thank everyone for tuning in and the great content, or the great comments, sorry, and the engagement. I love you guys. And I'm going to have another podcast for you in a few days. So until then, ride bikes, but keep the rubber side down.